It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us this week is Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, thanks for joining us this week.
Hey, Carl, thanks.
Well, state lawmakers passed the 2016 budget late Friday night. Lawmakers also passed a bill that increases funding for roads and bridges. Governor Dugard signed the transportation funding bill yesterday. And Roger, how does the final bill compare to what the governor and the senators in particular wanted?
Well, if you recall this, during the State of the State address, Governor Dugard suggested about a $50 million a year bill, which was about half of the amount that this summer legislative study had come up with. And all along in the show, we've been saying that the final result would probably come somewhere between those two numbers, and it almost landed dead center in the middle.
Do you think, Jonathan, that the extra funding will make a big difference for the state's roads and bridges?
Well, it'll make a difference. I mean, it certainly depends on who you talk to. You know, the $100 million figure that the legislative summer study came up with was significantly less than what they felt was needed long term. But, you know, this is obviously $80, $85 million a year. That's a pretty big juice for road funding. You know, and includes an additional $15 million, I believe, for, you know, local bridges, which have been one of the areas where, you know, I think that they've valued, in terms of just local bridges, probably $250 million in repair work needed. So, you know, I guess incrementally starts to address some of those areas.
And Roger, have you been hearing from anyone regarding, from the public, their reactions to this bill, one that raises fees and taxes?
I have been hearing a little. Some people are shocked that they were expecting a two cent per gallon gas tax increase, and then have that increase 2 years every year down the road. And instead, they changed that, so we're just going to get a 6% all at once and stay there. So it's going to be a little bit of a shock to people, especially when gas prices going up again now. But overall, I think people were well informed of this bill, well informed of the needs that are out there, and the amount of money it was going to take to start taking on some of those projects. So I don't think anybody's too upset about it.
Jonathan, from your perspective, have you talked to many people about this?
I haven't heard much negative feedback about this. Again, I think Roger's right. I think people sort of, going into the legislative session, there was a lot of work done by lawmakers, in particular the summer study, to go around the state and at least talk to a lot of the stakeholders. And at the end of the day, you know, what the legislators had proposed was much broader in terms of taxing sources, where they were going after money. This sort of goes back to the sort of traditional places where they have gotten tax money in the past. So, you know, it just seems, I think, probably people are somewhat comfortable because these are the areas where, you know, where they've paid taxes in the past. And, you know, frankly, I guess, you know, this is, and Roger said gas prices are going back up, but this is a pretty good time to raise gas taxes because prices are lower, and so people may not notice it as much.
Well, talking about raises, there was sort of a surprise addition to the bill, which was increasing the speed limit on interstates to 80 miles per hour. Roger, is that a good idea?
Well, it was certainly a surprise. I don't really know. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it one way or the other. You know, 5 miles an hour difference. If any interstate highways in the country were built to handle 80 mile an hour traffic, it was out here. They're very straight and very flat and very smooth. So I don't know if it's that big of a deal or a good idea or bad idea, but I'm sure people will start driving 5 miles an hour faster.
And Jonathan, your thoughts on raising the speed limit?
Well, of course, this is all part of the plan to raise more revenue, right? Because people are going to drive faster, they'll get less, you know, their fuel efficiency will go down, so they'll be spending more on gas and thus more on gas taxes. So it worked perfectly in this bill.
But they'll get out of the state faster, so they'll be buying it in Iowa or Wyoming, maybe.
Another bill that lawmakers passed on Friday, I don't know if you've been following this one, which was the Senate Bill 69, which was a petition reform bill, which ended up including a provision that makes it harder for independents to get on the ballot by taking away Democrats and Republicans' ability to sign the independent petitions. What do you think the motivations are behind this bill, Jonathan?
Boy, I have not followed the bill, and I would, without, you know, I would assume it would have had some support of the office of the Secretary of State, no doubt. But yeah, I haven't followed the bill, but it's not uncommon for. It's not uncommon for the major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, to sort of unite at times to make it more difficult for independents and third parties for ballot access. I mean, that's been a complaint that you've heard, particularly from the Libertarian Party across the country, that it's difficult for them to get ballot access. So if that does this, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that the two major political parties would try to do that.
Roger, have you followed this bill?
Not real closely, but I agree with Jonathan. It was we're talking about bringing initiated measures to the ballot. They tried to make that more difficult for people to do, and that failed pretty early in the session. So, not sure it was a surprise, but I'm not sure what the effects will be.
Looking at the 2015 session as a whole, Jonathan, did this seem like a productive session? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, it was a pretty, I would say it was a pretty meat and potatoes session. I mean, they got some things done that, again, incremental reforms. I think the governor's office, we talk about the transportation funding. I think the governor, you know, had come out in favor of some transportation funding, so the governor's office would be happy with that, obviously signed the bill. The juvenile justice reform package, again, was another priority of the governor's. So, you know, I suspect that they're happy. I mean, you had, again, some of the, as we expect, in South Dakota, there were some issues that came up with cultural issues, with regard to abortion. There were some issues that, again, with concealed carry. These are just things that come up in every legislative session. And so, you know, again, I think meat and potatoes. I mean, there were some incremental increases in more money than what lawmakers were required to spend on education. They found a little more money for education. They found some for Medicaid providers. Just nothing glitzy. In sessions past, you maybe looked at like some grand economic development projects, maybe the Homestake Mine, things like that. But you know, this is just kind of, you know, they got some things done.
Roger, did this seem to you like a meat and potato session as well?
It sure did, and it was pretty low key. It also, there was no real contentious issues that were going on. Everybody seemed to get along all right for the most part and got to work and got things done.
And Roger, do you see certain issues, however, that were left on the table that might come up again next year? I know Democrats are already talking about school aid and teacher pay.
The school aid will definitely, they appointed another group to study that issue just like they did the roads last year. But one thing that they passed the Senate Bill 2, I believe it was, with the drainage districts, but they kind of gutted the whole thing of any real meaning and just passed a shell bill so they can form one of these river basin district groups and see how it goes and then wait until next year or future years to actually give those groups some teeth and some funding. So that's an issue that you'll see back next year.
And Jonathan, in regards to the legislature's Blue Ribbon Task Force on teachers and students, do you think that will have a big difference, much of an impact in the education debate in the state?
Oh, that's hard to say, Carl. I mean, look, this education debate in the state's been going on for decades, and I think it's interesting. I mean, the governor wants, as he said when he proposed this, and it's been a month and a half or so, but you know, wanted to get some hard data on things like where there might be shortages, and, you know, whether it's geographic regions in the state and, you know, certain areas, and You know, I think, I mean, hey, I'm a data guy. I think data is always good. And so I kind of look forward to seeing what they come up with. You know, I do see that there were, you know, there was some criticism among some proponents of teacher pay, you know, want more teacher pay of the whole thing as an opportunity to kind of, they took it as an opportunity to sort of stall on the issue. But I mean, you know, I gotta say, I mean, this is an issue every legislative session. I mean, it just is. I mean, the Democrats make it an issue every legislative session. So for them to come and say we're going to do this again next year, you know, I'm not surprised. But I think this, you know, I mean, I think this Blue Ribbon Task Force, I mean, if everybody is honest and look in the data you know, look at the data and this is what the data says and this is probably what we need to do. I mean, if everybody's honest about this, I think it's probably a good thing. I mean, I think the governor has shown with other task forces with regard to, you know, juvenile justice reform and criminal justice reform and other issues that, you know, he is willing to take, you know, a look at an issue, a hard look at an issue that's studied and propose some changes. So if I were in the education institution, if I were a teacher, I think I would look at this as a positive. I mean, they're not just going to get a windfall of money, but I think that, you know, taking a long, hard look at how this funding formula works, I think that's a good thing in the long run.
Legislators return to Pierre in a couple of weeks to consider any gubernatorial vetoes. Roger Whittle, does it look like the governor will veto any bills?
Well, so far he hasn't. I think the one that would maybe be the most likely target would be the youth minimum wage one. I think, well, he probably agrees that it's a good thing. He has also said he wouldn't sign any bill that goes against the will of the voters. And, of course, the voters last year overwhelmingly approved the hike in the minimum wage. So that would be a target. Otherwise, none really jump out at me.
How about for you, Jonathan? Is it likely that he'll veto anything?
I'm not sure about the youth minimum wage one. That one's obviously garnered a lot of attention. But there are a couple bills that remain, you know, on his desk, Senate Bill 136 and Senate Bill 159. Senate Bill 159 is just the title is exempt amateur sports coaches from sales and use tax. And then the 136... has some, again, tax implications with regard to electric cooperatives. And so without getting into the guts of those bills, because you don't want everybody to fall asleep, they were opposed by the administration, by the Department of Revenue, as they went through the legislative process. So, you know, looking at those two bills, they were opposed by the Department of Revenue. I would expect that they would be good candidates for governor veto.
Moving on from the legislature, Senator John Thune has hired Joshua Shields to manage his re-election campaign. And, Jonathan, this is something you've written about. Who is Joshua Shields?
Who is John? Well, he's a Rapid City native, relatively young the life of a campaign manager or Senate campaign manager for that. You know, 35. But he started working with Thune in college as an intern and then was... worked in Thune's failed 02 campaign against Tim Johnson and was back for the 2004 race against Tom Daschle. And so he sort of spent his time, working, whether it be on campaigns or also on the legislative staffs. I mean, his big race for us here in South Dakota was the fact that he'd managed Kristi Noem's 2010 race in which she beat Stephanie Hirsess Sandlin. And after that, he left politics. He was on Representative Noem's staff for a little while, and then left politics. Part of that, I think, having to do with being married and starting a family. And he was in Rapid City working for Black Hills Corporation. But now he's returned to politics in the office where he sort of started as an intern more than 10 years ago.
Well, Roger, in looking at John Thune's campaign for a third term, which I don't think he's actually officially announced that he's running for a third term, does he really have much to worry about?
Well, I think there's little doubt that he will run for a third term, and I think there's little doubt that he has not much to worry about. So, I believe the last time he ran unopposed. It might be a bigger shock that the Democrats would find somebody to run against him this year than the actual chance of him losing.
Any ideas, Roger, who those possible Democrat might be?
Before we came on the air, I was trying to think of a name, and I could, other than me, I couldn't come up with anybody, and I guarantee you I'm not going to do it.
And Jonathan, any names out there for the Democrats?
Well, I mean, the usual suspects, and there's two of them, are Brendan Johnson and Stephanie Hurst Sandlin. I mean, I think Roll Call has a story today about Brendan has no interest necessarily in looking at 2016. And I mean, I can't imagine that Stephanie Hurst Sandlin, she's, at Raven. I mean, I don't see that happening. And so, I mean, the Democrats can't repeat what they did in 2010, which is running nobody. So there'll be somebody. And maybe somehow, somewhere, a top tier candidate kind of emerges. But right now, the top tier is Brendan Johnson and Stephanie Hursa Sandlin. I think if I were advising any, I'd be crazy to run. I mean, you know, the climate just doesn't favor Democrats right now. John Thune's got about more than $10 million sitting in the bank.
Well, this is Sunshine Week. Newspapers across the country are marking the week. It's designed to promote openness in government and public access to public records. And since we've got a couple of newspaper men here, thought we'd just, before we wind up, to talk a little bit about this. Roger, how open is South Dakota's government?
Well, that, again, depends on who you ask. The Center for Public Integrity website has us ranked 49th out of the 50 states. Just ahead of Georgia, and these kind of surveys come out every so often. We're never great, and usually more on the end of being bad.
And for Jonathan, in the work that you do and other reporters, what sort of difficulties do you have, if any, in getting public information for stories?
Well, there's. I will say this. I mean, under the Dugard administration, there's been a big change with regard to state government. So I give them credit for that. But for starters, I mean, in this state, you're dealing with a law, an open records law that includes a huge number of exemptions for records that just aren't publicly available that are routinely available in other states. So if you're starting at ground zero in this state. In this state, way behind where other states are in terms of government records, and you know, the big thing lately has been Hillary Clinton's emails, and I routinely use federal open record laws to get emails from federal officials to help write, I think, pretty good stories at times, and you can't do that in this state.
And Roger, do you find that this is something of an, I don't know if battle is the right word, but an ongoing effort to get information for newspaper reporters?
Oh, it is. I know a couple of years ago there was another of these summer task force that was told to come up with some bills to give to the legislature, and it had the backing of the governor's office and the attorney general's office, and I think they came up with seven or eight. I might be a little low on that, but and I think two or three of them passed. That was 2 years ago. So it's always a struggle in this. And I don't. And Jonathan's right that the state government isn't really where the big problems are. I think in a state like South Dakota, it's when you get down to the local level in the smaller communities where it's just a matter of they don't realize that everything they do is supposed to be publicly available. So. It's an ongoing fight that newspapers, and I'm assuming TV and radio stations, will always be fighting.
And Jonathan, you were on that task force, if I recall.
I was. I got my bill passed, you proposed the email issue. I mean, talking about public officials' emails. Are open at the federal level in most other states. You propose that, and that doesn't go anywhere here. The task force was pretty much evenly split between media and then state and then government interests. And so basically, if things deadlocked, well, there wasn't going to be a bill.
Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Jonathan, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
And Roger, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.